We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
What a news day. It's Monday. It's Mikey Monday. So we'll do first hour with producer Mike, second hour with intern Ned, and third hour we'll do the rant line and phone calls and all that stuff.
We're not rid of Ned yet?
Not rid of Ned. No, he's got another semester.
Oh, gosh. You got to talk to
Imagine
the recruiter.
That? I know. It's hard to get good interns these days, but the $250 brings in a few people. Let's see. I love this story. Did you see this story?
Let's hear
Wow.
It.
The Hartford Current is moving to Springfield. Well, at least they're publishing.
Springfield Current.
Yeah, it's got a nice ring to it.
Yeah,
does
right.
that still let them claim that they've been doing it since 1764?
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. Springfield Current. They should have an addition there. Anyway, more changing times, more bad news. We also started broadcasting in 1764 here at the great WTIC.
Yep. Same equipment.
Yep. Same tape recorder. It's got that colonial kind of swirl to it. Oh, it's delightful. So we've got Mike found some great sound cuts over the weekend with some concepts we wanted to share with you. You're going to find these quite stunning. You ready?
The U.S. had an exception.
I guess we should say who this is with that great voice. This is Eric Weinstein.
Correct.
Brother of...
Brett. Of
is Weinstein. It Wein, do they say Weinstein or Weinstein? Do you know?
I don't remember.
I think it's Weinstein they do. His brother is Brett Weinstein, who is the famous, well, infamous biologist from Evergreen State College in Washington State. Do you remember they got controversial a couple of years ago because he was hounded off campus for telling the truth about something that you're no longer allowed to be accurate about? Do you remember what that fight was about on campus, Mike?
Yeah, I think specifically it was the student population wanted to like create a day where like all white people had to stay home or
something. Oh, that's right.
Something like that. Yeah, it was like a race
and
related.
Brett wouldn't stay home, right?
Yeah, he said it was racist. So.
Yeah.
Which it kind
yeah,
of
you're
is.
Not supposed you're not in higher education, you're not allowed to be honest anymore. It's against the rules. So, Brett Weinstein got thrown out off the campus and he's now famous and a powerful independent force. He's on Joe Rogan regularly, has his own podcast. This is his brother, Eric, who's also, they're just so smart, these guys. So listen to Eric Weinstein. Let's listen to the first cut and then we'll give some context.
The U.S. had an exceptional run of it between 1945 and about 1971 through 73,
yeah,
where we had broadly distributed, very stable, technologically led growth.
All right, so he's laying out that we were a very growth-oriented place from Second World War up through the early 1970s. Growth economy. And think about it. Those boom years. All those guys coming back from war and suddenly diving into the economy and building a brand new economy because the economy had been turned into a wartime economy for World War II.
And this high level of growth caused us to predicate our institutions on an expectation of growth. Now, that expectation mysteriously changed around 1971 through 73.
All right. So what he's saying is we formed around the idea of that each year we could expect, if we had a good business, whatever we were managing, a school, a retail store, a manufacturer, we would expect that every year we would have growth because it was a huge boom economy and families, all these guys came home from World War II and got together with their ladies who they'd gotten promises from when they left, and they started making babies and America took off.
And this is the important singularity that we went through that many people don't even know existed. So what happened was that all of our institutions, and I think this is one of the most important stories that very few people know, all of our institutions have an expectation of growth, that you have so many years that you spend as an associate before you become the partner in a law firm or in a medical practice, or you're an associate professor before you're given tenure.
All right, so all of the institutions, Eric Weinstein is saying, formed around this idea that growth was inevitable. Growth was the thing. And you could count on it, and they designed these systems of ascending through the ranks of an organization, knowing that they would need more managers and more executives and all that kind of thing. So we were geared that way, and then in the 1970s, it started changing. Make sense to you, Mike?
Yeah, I'm trying to follow along.
It's a wonderful concept, because one of the things that the ruling class does to us is they choose a narrative for what's going wrong that fits their needs. And I think this context that Eric Weinstein is providing for what's going on right now in the world is really powerful. And one of the ways it's powerful is it shows you how important it is to have a vibrant intellectual discourse in the country, to have different people with different ideas expressing things in different ways. And one of the things the left is doing right now is trying to crush alternative thought. They're trying to crush free speech and make it impossible if you have an alternative viewpoint, if you want to provide a different way of looking at things, a different narrative, that they want to crush you before you have a chance.
Now, what happened was that those growth expectations couldn't be met in the same way that a plane has a stall speed.
All right, you understand this about the plane analogy that he's making? A plane has to be going a certain minimum speed if it's traveling, with a certain number of passengers or a certain payload on it at a certain altitude and in a certain direction, and whatever the circumstances, it has to maintain a minimum speed, or there isn't enough lift under the wings to keep it going up. And then it suddenly, the nose drops, and you're instantly in crisis. And I guess the problem with that analogy is we haven't gone into an instant crisis. We've gone in a slow, gradual one. But nevertheless, we did in the early 1970s, according to Weinstein, have a change go on where the economy, this paradigm of growth, permanent growth, stalled.
So we've been stalling out since the early 70s, is what he's saying.
Yeah, and if you think about what's going on in the world right now, if you think about all the strife, I've been saying for a long time that the frustration that we feel is about all the power in the world being divvied up, all the businesses have been started, all the real estate's been taken, and the money's been won, and people don't feel anymore like there's a way to go out and compete. And I think this provides a way of understanding why that is, that not only did we mature as a culture, so that 50 years ago, if you started, a water supplier in your town, or an oil company, 50 years ago, you might have been the first one in the town, or 60 years ago, and you might have, just because you were there first, or second, and you started that business and you worked it through the years, the fact that you owned the real estate, the fact that you had that business, that you cornered that business over years, that turned you into a wealthy person. And all of those opportunities have basically been divvied up, unless you get to go to elite schools and become part of the new economy. That is the innovation economy. So now we see elites having opportunities for jobs, but not working folk, because the manufacturing's gone overseas. A lot of this stuff has just been, there's other dynamics too. But I think this turning of the economy is a big thing. And it's really good to understand this idea that we're in a shrinkage economy. And that's part of the problem. A little more, Weinstein, anything you wanted to jump in with, Mike?
No, let's keep going.
Okay.
And so when all of these institutions stalled out at once because there was an implicit expectation of growth in the university systems, one professor might hope to leave between 20 and 30 students who would also hope to become professors.
Yeah, so this happened big time in the, he's an educator, so he's interested in the professorial spin on this, but applies to everything.
Now, that had to do with the fact that the university system was expanding from approximately educating 8% of the population at post-secondary level to around 50%. That was possible for a brief period of time to actually use the contributions of apprentice labor. And what happened was is that the universities had the most aggressive stall speed or ego. So if they didn't move fast enough, they became pathological before other institutions became pathological.
This is interesting about colleges and universities, because I know some people who thought they were going to be professors. And they went and got the training and studied these esoteric, ridiculous majors, thinking there'd be a university job for them. And they've gotten their doctorates in the last 10, 15 years, and there's no jobs. And they've just gone off and done whole different things. And I think we're seeing that happen in a lot of industries where the pressure of a shrinking economy is drying up the dollars. And it's exacerbated in a lot of industries by the internet or the movement of jobs overseas or what have you.
So is there like some sort of like stagnation? I mean, I guess that's what you're talking about, like when you're saying like a shrinkage economy. But like, so people who get in first get to the top position, so they're controlling the top levels of employment, and instead of moving on, things kind of just stagnate, and like you can increase the level of employment further down the chain, but it all like builds up so that there's less and less opportunity for people to
move. It's
up.
Like a clogged pipeline,
yeah,
like a bottleneck. There's just less room to advance to the top. And if you think about what the left does with this, the left probably understands this, but they blame it on racism. They just say it's racist. It's white supremacy. The whites are keeping all the jobs for themselves and not sharing. But it's really that we've got a shrinking economy.
Sure, but I also don't want to completely dismiss the idea of race being a factor. It could be just as much of a factor of, like, that's just how it was back in the day when people got these established positions. Like maybe, like, you know, you gave a promotion to your buddy John instead of the because he's your you've known him, he's your friend, instead of giving it to a equally qualified person of color or something.
Yes, but even if that happened in the past, we're in a new age of consciousness where you would assume that would be going on, that people being blocked because of gender or race or culture would be way down. But you can make it feel, or you can shift blame from a structural problem economically, that we're just in a different stage developmentally as a country, and get people all hyped up on the race thing. Because we know the left is motivated to do that. 860-522-9842. We'll take a quick break, take some phone calls. WTIC. It's Mikey Monday. Producer Mike on the air with me first hour. Jolly Ned second hour. Ugh. And then last hour, we'll do our usual last hour thing. What's that, Mike?
Just Ned. It's Monday.
Oh, you were groaning over the gov. That was a gubernatorial groan.
Yeah.
I capito. All right, so we're listening to Eric Weinstein provide a different narrative for looking at some of the stress and turmoil we feel as a nation. And I would argue to you, I was just showing Mike that the New York Times had a multi-page spread that attacking Trump, which is, you know, that's what they do every day, but they really played it up this time with so the front page says lies, anger, corruption, incompetence, chaos, decay, end our national crisis. The case against Donald Trump by the editorial board. That is a single photograph of wilting flowers with those words
You could just over. You could just replace Donald Trump with the New York Times, and it would be just as fitting.
Yes, it's quite remarkable. But the Times doesn't tell us this. Times doesn't harp every day on how hard it is in America today because the economy isn't growing the same way it used to because we went through a shift. We maxed out our post-war boom in the early 1970s, and since then, we've been a shrinking opportunity country.
No, it's not politically politically savvy to announce such things.
CNN could be doing it. I mean, somebody could be telling us the truth. The remarkable thing about this war on Trump is that it sucks all of the opportunity out of the marketplace of ideas. There is no pipeline, hardly, through which alternative ideas, even you would think that public radio and public television in their loftiness would be pursuing ideas like this. But they are so caught up in their leftism and their anti-Americanism that they want to be part of the destroy the president movement.
Now, do you think,
and plus it's where the money is.
Do you think anything would be different if Trump wasn't Trump? You know, like if 2024, the Republicans have to find some new candidate. If, like, will there ever be opportunity for what you're describing to actually happen, or will the biased
you
media,
mean for a good guy to get in?
Well, not only that, but just like for proper discourse, you're talking about, like, with Trump here. I think Trump kind of contributes, but obviously, like, the media goes all along with it and happily fills the airwaves with Trump bashing 100% of the time, or just even positive media, like a lot of Fox News is positive for Trump, but like it's Trump all the time. Like, if we had a little lower profile of a president who is Republican in this case, just because it's opposition to the media, what, you know, would it be any different? You know, do you know what I'm trying to say?
Well, that's a good question. Yeah, because the we've also gone through a structural change, which I think is driving a lot of this, in that the internet has started 25 years ago, shrinking the cash flow going to these news organizations. So they've stopped being news organizations because it's not so profitable anymore. So even a little paper like the Hartford Courant has their Me Too editorial blasting, endorsing Biden, saying that you have to vote for Biden because Trump is a racist. And, you know, that stuff is, again, there's real opportunity cost to that kind of ugliness, that the ugliness that the Courant is claiming to bemoan by endorsing Biden and saying you have to vote for him because we can't tolerate Trump's racism. They ignore the racism of the left. They ignore that Democrats run racism in America, operate the regions where racism is a hot issue, and operate the police departments and the education systems that deprive minorities of their opportunity. And they don't mention this because part of it, you have to say, is driven by business model, because that the easiest way to make money is to jump on the bandwagon of existing outrage.
Yeah. Well, there has to be a reckoning at some point, though, right?
Yes. Yeah. These things have to collapse. And at some point, minority voters and people sending their kids to schools of whatever race and whatever socioeconomic class have to look at it at some point and say, we deserve better than an education system that, oh, we're late for, yeah. Okay, let's get to our news update. Very apropos, Mikey. Mind games. It's Mikey Monday, producer Mike with me. We're talking about a theory of what's going on in America offered up by Eric Weinstein that suggests the reason we're feeling so much pressure, so much economic pressure, so much feeling so confined in terms of opportunity. It doesn't feel like America that we grew up with. And he's saying that's because in the 1970s, we reached our peak of economic growth in the post-war era, and that it's we're dealing with the long-term impacts of that. Stephen, calling from Winchester. Hey, Stephen.
Hey, Todd, Mike. I just wanted to inject a little bit of depth into your discussion of an idea that conflict is life. And what I mean by that is if a society goes into a mode where all it does is try to avoid conflict and make things easy and smooth and nice and easy, that atrophies the society. Let me give you, for instance, when a chick hatches, it fights its way out of the shell. And if you interfere mm-hmm. with that struggle, that chick is going to be negatively impacted, where it won't be able to cope with life after it hatches.
You mean if you help it out, it's you're messing up its normal development?
Yes. Yes. And part of what's happened is I felt this growing up. My mom, now this is kind of specific and personal, but my mom kind of felt sorry for me at times when my dad tried to be tough with me, to toughen me up as a boy. Mm-hmm. And she'd interfere. And she interfered with some of my development, which I think societies in the past knew was critical for a young man to develop properly to be able to cope with life later. Like, for instance, the Aboriginal tribes. Now, I'm not advocating this to this extreme, but they had an idea that I think if you could build on it, they would take their young boys and climb to the top of a tower, tie them to a vine and jump off that tower. You must have seen them on National Geographic.
I'm glad I don't watch that channel. This sounds horrible.
Well,
wait, what do they do with the kid? They leave the kid at the top tied, or they tie the kid to them and they jump?
No. They to become a man, they had to prove that they were brave enough to jump off this tower, and they just barely almost hit the ground. And if they survived it, They were a qualified man, and they eventually could.
Oh, it was like it was like bungee jumping.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Okay.
But it had a purpose, and this man could be trusted later on to be have character, because he couldn't be blackmailed, because he didn't have fear anymore, and we've. I don't want to use this term, because then I'll turn off all the ladies, but we've weakened.
Well, you're saying we've softened the culture by making it more
man,
feminine.
Big time.
But the truth is, we don't necessarily require that same intensity of say physical prowess versus intellectual prowess. We live in more intellectual times, so the equivalent might be dropping the kid off for the college boards today.
I would suppose so, but our physical is it has to be connected to our intellectual. I don't know if you saw the Star Trek version where the brains were in the glass and they had no bodies anymore, and Captain Kirk went down to the planet, and the Captain Kirk and his sidekick woman, they took over the brains for a little while, and they lived through them. That society, really, the whole thing was that the society died because they went totally intellectual and they had no physical attributes anymore.
Right. So they no longer existed physically. That's interesting. Stephen, thank you for injecting that idea into the conversation. 860-522-9842. What happened to mankind? How did we become the way we are today? Eric Weinstein is saying, in America, we're suffering all kinds of social upheaval and unrest simply because we have not understood and dealt with the fact that we've come to a point where we no longer have an expanding economy. We reached that point 50 years ago and we haven't adjusted, and now we're getting squeezed by it.
Yeah, so what should we have done? Is this a failure to evolve the system that we were in? Is this a inherent flaw in the system that we've always had? Like, this was just a natural inevitability of like human behavior mixed with economics and and circumstance? Like, was there a way we avoided this? You know, like, can we
I don't know. I expect the first step would be to understand that's the dynamic we're dealing with and confront it. Hi, you're on WTIC. Who's this?
Oh, John here from West Hartford.
Hey, John. Thanks for the call.
I lived through the period that is being described by Eric Weinstein. And I want to say that discrimination always existed. It existed when I was young for Italians and Jews. I remember Mario Cuomo, the father, graduated from law school, couldn't get a job with a white shoe Wall Street firm. I remember walking across campus as a junior, talking to a senior, and saying, "Why are there so many? There's so many corporate recruiters on campus. Why don't you interview with them?" And he stopped and looked at me and said, he was Jewish. He said, "Don't you know why there's so many Jewish doctors and lawyers?" I said, "No." I said, "Corporations don't hire Jews." Well, how did that all disappear? And it has, almost. In World War II, there was a draft. Everybody went. All the men saw each other as individuals. They depended upon each other. They got out of, when the war ended, the GI Bill, for the first time, stopped college from being elite to being, you know, just open. Also, the economy grew. All kinds of new jobs, industrial jobs, that at most required a high school education, if that. And so,
the economy was so hungry for workers that lot of those barriers disappeared by necessity.
After the war. And again, you know, as the economy grew, only a high school education was required to put a windshield in a Ford or something like that. What happened is, first of all, in the 70s, as Mr. Weinstein identifies, the very unpopular war in Vietnam really turned off the elites and the college faculty, and especially the kids who students, people who are students then and are leaders today. But also, was the end of the industrial era. The industrial era provided jobs for almost anyone and almost everyone. You could come here as an uneducated immigrant and get a job. Today, the high-tech society requires either a college degree or a very narrow specialization in something that is high-tech. And so the political crisis has been generated by a huge economic change from industrialization to high technology.
At the same time that we had fewer jobs, so
we didn't. To get a job, you have to have higher skills, specialized skills. Yeah. You just can't walk in.
Yeah, good context, John. Thank you for adding that to the conversation. 860-522-9842. It's Mikey Monday. Producer Mike is on the air with me this hour. And we'll have a press conference from the governor next hour, an update on the coronavirus, which, by the way, is continuing to get worse, even as the governor continues to, in his new mode of seeking to make as many people ill as possible, apparently. He now ignores the metrics that he used to say required us to be shut down, and he's now opening up in the face of the growth of the virus. That's pretty interesting, too. All right, I want to throw in the particular tragedy of a potential Democrat takeover of the White House right now. If you listen to the destruction that Biden wants to add to what we're already experiencing, it has to do with, in this shrinking economy and with our $30 trillion worth of debt that we'll never be able to pay off, Biden wants to grow the federal government to a point where states will become irrelevant and the feds will run everything.
We're going to invest.
I'm sorry, this is from a podcast from the New York Times.
We're going to invest $2 trillion in infrastructure to get to repairing our schools, our highways, our bridges, revitalizing our locks and our dams.
Now, why does he want to do huge federal spending on infrastructure that is the kind of thing that should be happening on a regular basis from the states? And the states also, like Connecticut as a premier example, have squandered our post-war assets. They have squandered all of the wealth, and it's not even a break even. It's not just, we made all that money and we have nothing. It's that, we made all that money and we have debt. And that debt was used to rig elections so that the Democrats could keep winning and keep messing up our economy. How's that one for an add-on, Mike?
It's pretty good.
Pretty scary, huh?
Like child care spending.
This is the reporter from the Times adding on to what Biden said.
Like child care spending.
Every 3- and 4-year-old child will get access to free, high-quality preschool, and low- and middle-income families won't spend more than 7% of their income on child care for children under the age of 5.
New minimums for the amount of money you have to pay to educate your own kids in nursery school. Why? Because they will create a federal workforce, or they will funnel money into the states in order to do what? To expand the unionized government workforce that put Connecticut $150 billion in debt. These are the premier system riggers, and the reason they've kept you so focused on their fixation with what's wrong with Donald Trump as a human being rather than his policies is so that they will be able to march to the rescue with more free stuff that they'll use to rig elections moving forward.
Like new workplace protections and, you know, union protections for people who work many of these lower wage jobs.
Yes, they love the low wage workers. They want to double their pay and make it permanent by making it unionized, so that we will never be able to fix those systems over time either.
Raising wages to protect workers and their overtime pay. Ensuring access to universal health care while guaranteeing that unions and union members can keep their current insurance if they choose. And above all, more union members, more unions, more collective bargaining everywhere in America.
Can you imagine what kind of a grotesque commitment that is? To commit to more organized labor, which is the destructive force of the state of Connecticut.
Everywhere in America.
Yeah.
And above all, more union members, more unions, more collective bargaining everywhere in America.
This is like, you know, the bank robber, Bonnie and Clyde having a press conference in the 1920s, promising that they're organizing, support them. They're organizing to rob more banks. These guys are the destroyers of our society, and they brazenly promise to offer more destruction because they get votes from that destruction. Wow.
What do they think would happen if everybody had a federal job and everybody was a unionized employee? Like, it would just be utopia or something?
Yeah, well, it would be utopia for them because all the money would pass through their hands. They would live like the elites in the Soviet Union or in Havana. So they don't care. The elites don't care that the rest of the society is crumbling around them as long as they get all the money. You know, even Putin is one of the richest men in the world, as are people from much smaller, more third world countries who are in leadership positions. Quick break. We'll talk more coming up. It's Mikey Monday. Good afternoon. Happy to have you here with us on Mikey Monday. Producer Mike with me. Hi, who's this? You're on WTIC.
This is Gene from Harlington.
Gene, what's happening?
How are you today?
We're rocking and rolling, can't you tell?
Well, that's a good thing. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. You're up and breathing. That's a good sign.
That's right.
Well, I've just been listening to you on your opinions about the downfall of society. And, you know, I have my own theory on it. Today we've become a very dramatic society. People are, you know, they love to make a big deal out of every little thing.
That's true.
You know, racism and this and that. Well, let me tell you, I was born in 1958. And I grew up in the 60s going to school, and I was born into a Polish family. So I was the target of many a ridicule Polish joke, you know? Oh, you dumb Polish.
Yes, lots of light bulbs coming your way. Sure.
What's that?
Lots of light bulbs coming your way.
Well, that's how it was. But you know what? We got used to it. You know, you grow a little bit of thick skin along the way.
Yes.
And you learn that it's not really all that bad. And if you laugh along with them, eventually it went away. You know, it didn't last forever. You know, if people would just learn to stomach it a little bit better, they'd be better off.
Well, I think you're right with that. Thank you, Gene, for the call. Good to hear from you. And who's next? You're on WTIC. Hi.
Yeah, hi, Todd. I agree with the last caller. But I was going to say, you know, over the years, there's not one reason, but there's a few. But there's not that many reasons. You know, the further we've gotten away from the Constitution, it really started to erode in about 1913, and it hasn't stopped since. That's kind of gone along with the same time period where there was a big push for public education. And, of course, our public education is a total disaster. We've dumbed down our population so severely that they're so easily manipulated now. They don't even understand what the Constitution is. And so as time goes on, we just keep chipping away. And the latest events with the COVID and all this, just more and more chipping away at this Constitution. And that really is driving it for this society.
I think that's a real good point. Yes, Mike.
Well, what happened in 1913? What is this?
Well, in 13, a lot of things happened. We had the Federal Reserve was created in 1913. Also, there was a big push for they went to state. They didn't elect their senators anymore. Now went by popular vote. Took more power away from the states. Okay. People are talking about the electoral college now. Getting rid of that. That takes more power away from the states. So these people that want this one government, and they want to consolidate power in one place, it means that people are going to lose their rights. And from there, you know, we had constitutional amendments and the eroding of the Constitution through the judicial process and the decisions that the judges have been coming up with.
No, that's right. I've got to hold you right there because we're out of time for this hour.
Good stuff.
Just think about all that stuff, and then you hit the moment where the society starts shrinking, less money coming into the government, after the government has spent all these years trying to undo the Constitution and make itself responsible for a lot more. Thank you for that call, 860-522-9842. The governor coming up next, we think. Stay with us on WTIC. We go to the Brown Payne Harrison Scott Traffic Center. Mark Christopher with us now on a Monday.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.